Isn't today great? Today is such a great day. Everything is so great.
We're going to have a lot of fun. We got some wonderful people for you.
All you mommies and daddies out there who complain to the radio station, I got something to say to you.
And the first thing you've got to do is say the call letters properly. Okay?
It's an incredible metamorphosis of love and emotion and sensitivity and tenderness and fun and joy and happiness.
Did you know that this show represents health and hope?
It's always a great day for compelling and compassionate conversation on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. How are you? I know, another crazy week. We'll take it all on, and we'll also celebrate the arts. You know, we do that a lot here. We often talk about the inspiration and the empowerment of the arts, but what about when the arts and politics converge? We have a historian and author who will take us into that world as we talk about propaganda and the arts through the guise of the iconic modern dancer and choreographer Martha Graham. That's coming up in a moment. You too in the mix. Are you listening live? It is Thursday, July 23rd, 12 noon out west, 2 p.m. Central, 3 o'clock here in the east. Our number in motion, 347-857-4505. Twitter, you know, is 24/7 live or on podcast. Jump in when it works for you at AB Writes. And if you are taking along for that live ride, you can also avail yourself of the Facebook page and or the PopNet chat box. The TCS crew are handling things for us, the talented Trudy and Aurora in the booth, ML at headquarters. Show brought to you in part by Dunkin'. The universe runs on Dunkin'. Get all your favorites safely. Download their app today for contactless ordering. The universe still runs on Dunkin'. Also by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And by our pals at PopNet. Arts, culture, conversation, on air, online, up and running 24/7, and featuring select editions of the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. So delighted to welcome Victoria Phillips to the show. She is the author of this fascinating book, Martha Graham's Cold War, The Dance of American Diplomacy. And not only is she a historian and an author, but she studied with Martha Graham, which I think is fascinating as a young girl. Victoria, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you so much, Amy, and thank you for having me.
A pleasure. Let me ask you right off the bat, you know, you studied as a, you were a dancer in your youth, and you actually studied with Martha Graham. How fascinating is that? Were the seeds always planted that you wanted to revisit her as a subject of a book, or this is just coincidence?
She was very inspirational in forging my desire to write this book. I was 16 when I first saw Martha Graham on stage, and my first thought was, I want to do that. She was inspirational. She was powerful. She had a charisma like nothing I've ever seen, and I was compelled and fascinated by the characters that she brought to stage, from Jocasta in the story of Oedipus and Greek tragedies to a work called Diversion of Angels, which just depicted the passion, the purity, and the outright joy of love. So I was immediately inspired by Graham, saw her on stage the next day, showed up at the school, and made my way into company class within a year and a half. In 1979, the studio emptied out, and I thought, well, that's awfully odd. There was no one in the company there, and it seemed like a big tour, and indeed, she had taken the company to the Middle East on what was known as the Jimmy Carter Goodwill Tour, which was a part of the Camp David Accords. So I intersected with this, not knowing, of course, at 19 that this was going on, and remembering quite distinctly that Martha Graham said, my work is not political. I am not political. So, of course, this was a very interesting moment when I figured out that she indeed was quite political.
Yeah, fascinating. Fascinating to have that experience. And, of course, you were a dancer for a while, and then you went into an academic career years later. And this opportunity, I guess, the seeds were planted to explore this on some level, I guess, right?
That's right. So I was writing about dance and the arts, and specifically politics and the arts. I was very interested in government support for the arts early in the Roosevelt administration, and then the Martha Graham archives, which had been embroiled in typical Martha Graham drama in legal battles, they opened up at the Library of Congress, and I was invited in to be the first scholar to look at these papers. And, of course, remembering Martha Graham saying, my work is not political, I went in as a now budding historian and saw letters from George Kennan, known as the Cold War Architect of Containment, from John Foster Dulles, Secretary of State under Eisenhower, Alan Dulles, head of the CIA, Henry Kissinger, Secretary of State and under Nixon and Ford, and of course a very large figure in American diplomatic life in the 20th century in the Cold War. And I thought, well, this is interesting. This seems very political to me. And that's where that's how it all began.
That's how it started. Well, what was it about Martha Graham? I mean, she herself, of course, as you said, she demurred and said she wasn't political, but she was. But how did she get embroiled into it? I mean, it seemed like they wanted to use, in the 50s, particularly as the Cold War was raging, as you said, Kennan and others wanted to use modern dance, jazz, other forms of the arts as purely American, the idea of American individualism, American art. But what was it about Martha Graham that she sort of became this ambassador to the arts for decades? I mean, she was from Eisenhower through Reagan, right?
Eisenhower through Reagan, and she started performing at the White House in 1937 under Roosevelt, and there was a trip planned under Bush in November 1989, but a funny thing happened. The Berlin Wall fell, so that tour was pulled back as the Cold War seemed to be over. So she really hit every administration, even Truman's receiving an award from him. And I believe what made her such a fantastic ambassador was, A, her charisma and her ability to hobnob and on what they called the cocktail circuit of diplomacy, doing something called trickle-down diplomacy. She was very good with elites, with students, with other thinkers, as it were, political and otherwise. But she also brought these wonderful dancers and these works that hit many different topics. One would be the universalism that would bind us all. Cold War was the study of the hearts and minds of mankind. So she would bring that with things like Diversion of Angels and Love. Then she also brought the stories from Greek myths that would tell the world that we were culturally sophisticated, and then the Americana, Appalachian Spring and Tales of the Grand Frontier, in this kind of story of American empire of freedom. So she brought this smorgasbord of what could be used as propaganda.
Yeah, fascinating. There's also a little bit of a dual propaganda war going on with the Soviet Union, too, because they tried to use, and they did use, Isadora Duncan. Is that right?
That's correct. They used Isadora Duncan very early on under Lenin, but then really let modernism go. And George Kennan recalls seeing the beauty of the Soviet ballet as opposed to these dreadful leftover Duncan dancers at an outdoor circus. What Graham brought, if the Soviets brought this highly sophisticated, technically demanding ballet form, it was nobles and princes and point shoes and young women, swans. So it was a very different type of story. So Giselle, which is the story of the country girl who is beloved by the nobleman, and then he kind of gets rid of her, and there's a mad scene. And the way I like to think of it is there she is in point shoes, and it's a class struggle. However, Graham brought lamentation, which took out the who. It took out the where. It took out the why. It took out the when. And just showed a woman experiencing terrible grief. And that is where the United States could fight against the Soviet in what I call an apples-to-oranges fight. The Soviets had no modern dance, although they had this very sophisticated ballet. We could argue with a sophisticated modern dance.
Tell me a little bit about when you explored her papers, and what a thrill for you as a former student must have been to be the first person the honor to look at those papers first. What surprised you? I mean, were there things that you said, you know, she told you and told people, I'm not political, but what was in those papers that made you think she particularly was, not just her experiences, but her own? Did she have a point of view that, because she worked throughout different administrations, regardless of party and ideology.
To me, what was most interesting were the contradictions. So there were United States Information Agency reports. The United States Information Agency was almost like the ad agency for the United States during the Cold War. And they would report back on these wonderful tours that Graham had done. And then if you went into those country files, particularly in Germany or in Poland, it turned out that not all the performances were really that well received. So that also told me something about the way government works. And these kinds of very nuanced contradictions for me were fascinating. The other thing that I found truly compelling was Graham's approach to race. Of course, it was the United States' Achilles heel, and very much so in practice, and this was used by the Soviet Union as anti-American propaganda. And Martha Graham came with what the government called the United Nations of Dancers. She had Japanese, she had Jewish, she had Christian, she had Asian, she had African American, Caribbean American. She had a melange of potent, powerful young dancers. And so this was fascinating for me to see in action.
And her feeling about race was what, that she wanted to be inclusive, or she was doing this for propaganda purposes?
Well, this is a key question in the book. So Martha Graham did what she did because of an internal and intrinsic belief that she held. So in the interwar period, when there was quite a bit of anti-Semitism in the United States, she hired Jewish dancers because she felt they were the best dancers for the role. In 1941, she hired Yuriko out of an internment camp in the middle of America, who had been released by Eleanor Roosevelt from the U.S. internment camp. In 1951, she hired Mary Hinkson and Matt Tierney and became the first person running a major modern dance company to hire African-American dancers, and then she stopped touring the South. So she gave up bookings in order to retain that integrity. So that was her position. She was the first person to put a mixed-race couple on stage. In Diversion of Angels, The Purity of Love with Mary Hinkson and Bertram Ross, an African-American woman, Caucasian Jewish man. Yet when Mary and Bert show up in the White House performing for President Johnson and greeted by Lady Bird, that moment with his position on civil rights, of course, looks a lot like propaganda. Yes?
I see. But you're saying she really did have that as an integral part of her philosophy and her own artistic vision, that she wanted to do this. So it wasn't.
That's correct. And
it
also became wonderful propaganda for the United States government.
Right. And propaganda, of course, is sort of a sullied term now, but it was a useful tool and could still
Absolutely.
Be considered a useful tool. Yeah.
Absolutely. So they were so unlike the Soviets, and this was the argument, unlike the Soviets that made government-sponsored propaganda, Martha Graham was indeed and presented as kind of a spontaneous eruption of American values.
Yeah, wow, amazing. Did you ever get to talk to her when you were writing this book or thinking about it? I mean, she lived a nice long life. I forget exactly when did she die, in 89 or 92?
She died conveniently with the end of the Cold War on April Fool's Day, 1991.
91, okay, right.
So I was not able to speak to Martha herself. I did speak with her when I was a student. But what I was able to do was do a massive amount of oral histories with her dancers. And this is where color in the book can come from. When they were on tour, how they managed to find a Thanksgiving dinner of pigeons in Poland. Little twists such as that that I can put in the book. These dancers are still alive. Many of them knew Martha Graham not only professionally but also personally. And so their stories are woven throughout the book.
Yeah, Fascinating. And, of course, she tried, I think, as you said, she was going to have a tour under the Bush administration, and I think she kind of got on the nerves of the Bushes. She kept bugging them for things, and they were sort of like, why does she keep bugging us? We already sent her a card, that kind of thing, you know?
Graham had an amazing ability to sidle up to first ladies, from Eleanor Roosevelt. Jackie Kennedy Onassis was a longtime supporter. They both had fashion. They loved fashion. They loved kind of the high life, Madison Avenue, Halston, that life. Betty Ford had studied with her and became a very large supporter of hers, and had all sorts of planning for the Medal of Freedom. They had matching outfits from Halston. And then also Barbara Bush seemed to be very fond of Martha Graham, although I can't say that I got the impression that the president was equally as enthralled. However, Ronald Reagan and Graham, of course, seemed like there's like this wonderful picture. They seem like charming buddies at a White House lunch, but I don't believe Nancy was as fond of Graham as Ronnie was.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, maybe a little jealousy there. What do you think she would make of what's going on now and the idea of, you know, part of the arts breaking down walls with the Trump's wall? I mean, what do you think she'd make of Trump? How does she fit in with that?
It's a really interesting question. And actually, our current president does enter in the book. Martha Graham said, I am not modern. I am always contemporary. And indeed, she did seem to manage that with our current president. When the 1989 tour was being scouted, Linda Hodes, one of her dancers, was in Moscow looking for the apartment and at the stages. And on her ride home, she met in the airport someone who was scouting golf courses for our president at the same time. So indeed, they did slightly intersect in that desire to go to Moscow with their product. Graham was very much someone. There's a wonderful scene from the Jimmy Carter Goodwill tour when they can't cross the border between Egypt and Israel because it's all so new. And they back the truck up with the sets and costumes, and they're passed hand to hand, from stagehand to stagehand. And apparently the cultural attaché was practically in tears when she saw this as a people-to-people experience. And Graham was quite triumphant about the fall of the Berlin Wall. She had performed in the East. She had performed in the West. And she felt that that wall was not only a physical barrier, but that it was a communication barrier, one man to the other. So she was entirely dedicated to cross-border, cross-national, cross-race, cross-religion communication.
So she would not be a fan, is what you're saying, of what's going on today.
Well, knowing a little, she would she claimed not to work for Nixon. She said, you know, that's the one White House I never worked for. Well, she actually planned a tour under Kissinger, claiming that she had never worked under Nixon. But she did, there was a long tour planned under Kissinger. Nixon resigned, and she went out under Ford with Betty kind of riding side shot. My sense is of Martha that she might find – I can imagine that she and Fiona Hill might be getting along quite well right now. So she has this amazing ability to find someone in government who she could work with.
Fascinating. She'd find somebody to get her work out there. Like you said, her paths are – even though she's gone now for a couple of decades, somehow she's sort of still interspersed into the history of it all. It's fascinating.
That's right.
What a fascinating life, and what interesting transitions you made in your own life, too, as we talk about a lot of transitions from a dancer to an academic career. How did you make that leap? I know your family was academic, and they weren't too thrilled with the dancing at one point, right?
My family was not thrilled with my choice of career and asked for the keys to the house back when I decided that I would prefer to study with Martha Graham than go to college. Then I became an extremely good waitress. Unfortunately, the good days for waitressing are Thursday through Sunday, and those are the days that are the good days for performing as well. There was a bit of a clash of careers. Then I went to college as a mature student, as they say.
And you found your new footing in this fascinating work. Are you working on anything now, new? Or, I mean, these historians, these books are huge, and they take a long time. I know that. So are you just taking a break and just talking about this, or are you already plunge into the next project?
Oh, absolutely not. I am not one to take breaks. I'm working on filling out Chapter 3 of this book. Chapter 3 features Eleanor Dulles, who was the sister of John Foster, Secretary of State under Eisenhower, and also Allen, who was director of the CIA. And she was head of something called the Berlin Desk and worked in West Berlin and East Berlin as she could to bring refugees over and create distress for the East Germans and what she called the Kremlin. And she is a much overlooked character, so I'm writing a biography of her.
Fascinating. Okay, so you're back at it. Well, in the meantime, congrats on this one, Martha Graham's Cold War, The Dance of American Diplomacy, Victoria Phillips, the historian and author and former Martha Graham dancer. Thank you for joining us. Congratulations and best of luck with the new project.
Thank you so much, Amy, and thank you for having me on the show.
You're very welcome. Take care. That's Victoria Phillips. Do you have a website where people can get the info on the book?
I do. www.victoria-phillips with two L's .global. And it's also available through Oxford University Press.
We'll post those links for you when the podcast becomes available. Thank you so much, Victoria. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. This is the end of the Thurkley Show. Stick around. We're coming right back.
To the best of my knowledge, we're sitting at the White House.
I must tell you.
No, I'm just telling you. And the Oval Office is right behind us.
Fox News has a new poll out today. Joe Biden leads you by 8 points, 49% to 41.
First of all, I'm not losing.
People trust Biden more to handle the coronavirus by 17 points, on race relations by 21 points.
Those are fake polls.
You still have more than 100 days to this election, but at this point, you're losing.
Not on my watch. It's not going to happen on my watch. I have other polls that put me leading. I have a poll where we're leading in every swing state.
If I may, sir, respectfully, in the Fox poll, they ask people who is more competent, whose mind is sounder.
Yes.
Biden beats you in that.
Let's take a test. Let's go down. Joe and I will take a test. Let him take the same test that I took.
Incidentally, I took the test, too, when I heard that you passed it. Well, it's not the hardest test.
Nobody's done what I've done.
There's a picture, and it's a flat, and it's an elephant.
No. See, that's all misrepresentation. Yes, the first few questions are easy, but I'll bet you couldn't even answer the last five questions. I'll bet you couldn't. They get very hard, the last five questions.
Well, one of them was count back from 100 by 7.
Let me tell you. You couldn't answer.
All right, what's the question?
Many of the questions. I'd get you the test. I'd like to give it. But
right.
I guarantee you that Joe Biden could not answer those questions.
Okay.
Don't you believe America deserves a president who doesn't brag he can spot an elephant? The Lincoln Project is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Tell all you fascists, you may be surprised. People all over this world are getting organized and bound. You fascists.
Has a car and boat trailer, and there's a shopping trailer for his wife.
3, 2, 1.
I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me.
newly renamed The Chicks on the Amy Beth Arkley Show title track from their new offering, Gaslighter. Fascinating stuff. Billy Bragg with Wilco, too. Tip of the hat to the great late Woody Guthrie. All you fascists are bound to die. And a big thank you to Victoria Phillips, the historian and author of this great new book, Martha Graham's Cold War, The Dance of American Diplomacy. If you like dance, politics, history, the arts, and all the, how they all converge, and of course Martha Graham is such a larger-than-life figure, you'll enjoy this book, I'm sure. Indeed, it's fascinating stuff. Are you joining us live for the Thursday, July 23rd ride? You can jump in when it works for you at Twitter, AB Writes, of course. Phone line for those on the live ride, 347-857-4505, as is the Facebook page, and the PopNet chat box where Don chimes in. Thank you for underscoring another strong woman, Martha Graham. Wow, what a figure in history. Indeed she was, for sure. And Krim says, you're probably right. She would have no use for Donald Trump, but I bet she would charm him. And if she did, she'd have him in the palm of her hands because he's easily manipulated with a kind word or two. Yeah. So it seems. So it seems, indeed. But I think she'd have no use for his particular divisive kind of politics, and that's kind of where we're talking about today with the war against the Battle of Portland, the Battle of Chicago, the Battle of Albuquerque, New Mexico. Trump is a wag-the-dog business, I guess. He's trying to gin up strife in the streets so that he can proclaim law and order, and he's going to combat it. But it's happening on his watch, so it's kind of a disconnect. And, of course, he's restarted his infamous coronavirus task force briefings, although he's the only one at the podium giving concise views. 2 days looked like he was sweating it out big time and reading from the script. They made a big deal, I guess, on Monday by saying he, or Tuesday, that he changed his tone. He just reads from the script. As soon as he goes off the script, he's back to his old belligerent, incoherent self. So I don't know what people are expecting. And, of course, he upended himself on the first briefing when his response to the what do you know about Ghislaine Maxwell, the woman who is now behind bars as the co-conspirator with child molester, pedophile, now deceased Jeffrey Epstein, who was, of course, a friend of Donald Trump's for years, and many pictures and videos with them all together, including Ghislaine Maxwell. He just said, yeah, I wish her well. So blowback beyond belief on that one. The only people coming to his defense, intriguing folks like Geraldo Rivera, who said it was a good thing to do and she should be let out on bail. You kind of wonder, what does Geraldo know? Was he part of the folks who were traveling on the Lolita? I mean, there are a lot of these people who were shrouded in that black book of Epstein and maybe her black book. So the question is, she's under suicide watch. Should she also be under watch other security reasons, too? Because, you know, the whole Epstein business is very murky. Strange stuff indeed. I don't know. Twitter, AB Wright, phone line 347-857-4505, Facebook page, PopNet chat box, also available. Melinda on the coronavirus task force stuff says, he's wasting our time. I wish CNN and MSNBC would pull the plug already. They don't have to show it live. Just tape it. Yeah, I was kind of saying that, too, the other day. Tape it. It's news because he's the president, but you don't have to show it in real time because I have to fact-check it when he says and gives out all this misinformation, which he does. The other startling thing, though, I thought, besides the scandalous comment about wishing an alleged child molester or procurer or whatever you want to call her, well, was this notion that we're starting to form a strategy to deal with the COVID-19 crisis. This has been going on for 6 months. Shouldn't you have started your strategy back in January or February? Why are you starting a strategy now? The strategy heretofore has been let the states handle it, except when I don't like it and I tell them to open schools, but without any provisions or plans or funding. I mean, it's just outrageous that we could now think that he's going to make this course correction and people are going to believe that he's doing something about it when we have 143,000 plus people dead. And again, as we always say, he didn't cause this virus. Of course, he's using his racist tropes by calling it the China virus because he wants to push it on China, the blame. Yes, you know, blame goes to China, too. I'm not saying it doesn't. And there's blame to go around, and nobody's blaming him for the actual virus, but for not mitigating the situation and crushing it the way some other countries have done. Part of that falls at his feet because there's no national plan, and governors are left to scramble by their own, mayors are left to scramble on their own, and some of them are doing a good job, and some of them are following his lead and not doing such a hot job. And so we're here in a very bad situation, so it's very nervy to say we're now planning a strategy. Our plan is to plan something 6 months into it. Outrageous. Keep that in mind and mobilize your votes. And, of course, he also wants to undermine the election and brag about how he passed a cognitive screening test for dementia. 2 years ago, by the way. This was 2 years ago when Ronnie Jackson administered it to him. So it's not even like it's a recent thing. Maybe you should take a new one. He said he wanted to have Joe Biden go down and take it with him. Maybe they should, because it's a little crazy to brag about that. What say you? Twitter, AB Wright, phone line 347-857-4505, Facebook page, PopNet chat box. Who is chiming in here? Jed says, I wonder what was flashing through Trump's mind when he tries to describe his cognitive test. Could it be pictures of him dancing with sexual predators? That's kind of redundant because he himself has been accused of not child rape or molestation, but certainly abuse and rape of adult women. So, you know, we're in very dangerous, sordid territory. It's kind of unfathomable to a lot of people how we're going to get ourselves out of it. But we can with election, but we have to mobilize. This is what we say. We say this every time. Broken record, I know. You got to make sure to register. Find out if you're registered. Get your people who are fence sitters to register. And let's push for mail-in voting and push for safe polling, et cetera, wherever it is, because he will try to undermine it. If we have a big showing and a big turnout and down the ballot blue, we have a better chance of having this be seen as a legitimate election, because he's going to try to undermine the results should he lose. And he will, of course, is open to, he's admitted it publicly, that he's open to having interference from the Russians, the Chinese, whomever. He wants to have foreign interference. He already said he got himself impeached, for goodness sakes. And I hate it when the media forgets. I always say he's the impeached rogue occupant of that office. He's been impeached already. He got himself impeached by trying to finagle and get a foreign entity, Ukraine, to give him dirt on and manufacture dirt on Joe Biden, his son. I mean, it's just crazy making. But he also admitted openly in interviews with people like George Stephanopoulos, yeah, I'd want to see foreign interference. Why not? So, and he has his toadies in the Republican Party trying to whitewash the idea of using, through the legislation, I don't think it'll pass the House, but in the Senate, they're trying to whitewash the idea that you don't have to disclose any kind of foreign interference or foreign monies in your campaign where previously you had to. I don't think that's going to fly in the House, but it's interesting how flagrant these people are being about it. I mean, their idol, their icon, Ronald Reagan, must be rolling over his grave every day, twice a day, with the way these people have just discarded the Soviet or Russian menace. It's crazy. Crazy, Mickey. Indeed. So hang in there, Democrats. Don't be bitter, but be blue. There's a send-up to belated birthday wishes to Cat Stevens, a.k.a. Yusuf Islam. It's it was his birthday. He was 72 years old the other day. Don't be bitter, but be blue. Reach out.
obsessed with the liar tweets tonight.
Hey, hey.
Doctors, hush reporters, hush you science nerds. Look, my ratings are through the roof when I just say happy words. A hoax like all the rest, a left-wing coup. We've got lots of PPE, the cupboard's bare. It's Obama's fault, you see, the buck stops there. In the country, the quiet country, no nurses sleep tonight. But in the White House, the full of shite house, the liar tweets tonight.
I was serving time in Tehachapi. 4 o'clock in the morning, I was sleeping in my cell. I heard a whistle blow, and I heard somebody yell. Block number 4, red like fire across the prison floor. Warden came in with a big Tommy gun. Bang, bang, bang. Trying to stop my gun, but there's a riot going on. There's a riot going on. There's a riot going on. Up in cell block number 9. With your hands up in the air, you don't stop this riot, you all gonna get the chair. Two gun Matilda said it's too late to quit. Pass the dynamite, Molly, cause man, the shooting is there's a riot going on. There's a riot going on. There's a riot going on. We're up in cell block number 9. They call the state militia to help them win the fight. Drove up to the prison in the middle of the night. Each and every trooper, he looked so tall and fine. All the chicks went crazy up in cell block number 9. And there's a riot going on. There's a riot going on. There's a riot going on. Up in cell block number 9.
Forgotten 45 for our riotous times. Wanda Jackson on the Amy Beth Oakley Show. There's a riot going on in cell block number 9. For Mel, thanks for chiming in via the PopNet chat box. And Roy Zimmerman, the great song satirist, tongue firmly planted in cheek, the liar tweets tonight. Cat Stevens too, a.k.a. Yusuf Eslim, and Bitter Blue, happy belated birthday. Don't be bitter, but vote blue. Hey, you know what else helps? Squelch the bitters, delving into your own creative well. It always helps. Assuage anxieties, dampen down negativity, process through all your fears and concerns, good and bad. All those emotions get processed through when you delve into the creative well. And with that end, the Inspiration to Action Challenge has helped folks reconnect with their inner artist. Always gratified when it works. Molly in Evanston, Illinois gets our shout-out today. She says, been doing that challenge for over 3 years. Seriously, a very creative quarantine, which I don't think would happen had you not given me the nudge years ago. I've been writing like mad and painting too, so thank you. Well, thank you, Molly, and keep it at it. I know you're working hard. And by the way, if the Inspiration to Action Challenge has worked for you, I'd love to give you a shout-out. You deserve it. And also, you're helping other folks take that plunge to get into the creative well. So reach out to me if you need a little push in the right direction. We can start a creativity coaching counseling conversation. Either way, reach out via the website, amybetharkawy, A-R-K-A-W-Y.com. Easy access via the Twitter feed. While you're there, you can chime in with guest suggestions, Big Story and Forgotten 45 requests, and peruse my stories, the Eliza Gordon Mystery. Some other goodies are up for grabs. We also have social media connections and links to the podcast. It's one-stop shopping at the website, amybetharkawy.com. Good stuff indeed. The creative well keeps working. And music moves us forward. As we know, here's a great one from the Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit, the new album, Reunions. It's Running With Her Eyes Closed on the Indie Desert. We'll be right back.
off right now. Maybe I should just lay down. If vanity's my vitamin, but I don't feel the difference. I don't like myself right now. Gotta find a way out. What you feel is natural, but I don't wanna feel it anymore. Pick yourself up off the kitchen floor. What you waiting for?
Thanks for tagging along for this Thursday ride. Let's do one final time around the social media horn before we sashay out of here on the disastrous coronavirus briefings that have just restarted. Den says after that three-month hiatus, Trump returned with lies, false facts, dangerous medical advice, and blaming others for his failures. Don't watch him because all he cares about is the ratings. Yeah, he did say that. It was funny how he didn't say he didn't only care about the ratings, but he said we had good ratings. He's looking for that. He wants that adulation. He's hoping, because his poll numbers are dipping crazy, that if he changes course now and people were bragging about the tonal change, well, he was, to me, he looked, I only saw a smattering of it the other day, but he looked very sweaty. He was reading directly from a script. As soon as he got off script, he went back to his usual self. The way he said about masks, people should take masks, he's reading it. If they need them, if they can't, if they're useful, if you can't stand apart. I mean, it was awkward at best, and I think it's too little too late in terms of the idea that he's now going to, they're going to first come up with a strategy. They're first going to form a strategy 6 months into it, 143,000 plus dead. Craziness. Gary on Twitter says, Trump thinks every problem can be solved with a public relations campaign, so the restart of the disastrous Trump briefings on COVID-19, thinks that if lying and pretending everything is fine will fool Americans, I think it's too little too late. That's what I said, Gary. I agree. Not good at all. Darcy on the PopNet chat box says, Trump has got to go. We all know it. The question is, will they steal the election? And I still think they can. And you know what, Darcy? I do too. And that's why I keep saying we have to mobilize. We have to band together. We have to fight as hard as we can to make sure this doesn't happen. And that means making sure you're registered, pushing for mail-in voting, get all the people on the fence that you know on our side and make sure they all vote. Apathy is not going to be an option. We have to do it. We just can't have this kind of option of sitting around and expecting things to just happen for us or take for granted that they're going to happen or not be enthusiastic enough about Biden. The heck with it. We have to do it. It's an existential issue. Then you work on Biden if you don't like that he's liberal enough for you, progressive enough for you. I don't know. Keep working on it. Howard Fineman, who is the noted political analyst and reporter for years, says, can't overstate how crucial Joe Biden's VP pick is for the election and the presidency. Should he win, he's been lucky and smart so far. He now only needs to clear hurdles of VP and debates. He'll be 78 soon and also would need extra help repairing a society that Trump wrecked. Exactly. The guy wrecked it. We have to fix it. We all have to band together and do it. And I hope he picks the right person. I hope he remembers his base and who will be enthusiastic. I mean, I will vote for him if the turnip that's grown fuzzy in the back of my refrigerator was the nominee. But he can do the right thing because there are some good people out there who deserve to be picked. But whoever it is, we have to band together and we can't have the purity test and people arguing and nitpicking over it because this is serious business. Look at what's happening in Portland. Look at what's happening. He's threatening to send these troops into Chicago and Albuquerque and God knows where else. He's ginning up all kinds of problems and manufacturing strife that doesn't exist and making it into a more violent summer than it really is when most of the protests are peaceful. And he's causing this to have people unidentified, grabbing people off the streets. It's like we're already in that banana republic that he will get us into should he claim and steal that next election. So, yeah, complacency is not an answer. The polls are on our side, but we got a long way to go, and the chicanery will be in high gear during this campaign season on the part of Trump and his enablers. But we all have to band together, patriots of all stripes. It's not about party anymore. It's about doing the right thing. Let's do it, and let's make it work. I think we can do it. Do indeed. Hey, thanks so much for joining us today on this Thursday ride. A special thanks going out again to Victoria Phillips, the author and historian. The new book is out. It's called Martha Graham's Cold War, The Dance of American Diplomacy. Fascinating read, indeed. We'll get you some links for that, and check it out. I think you'll enjoy it. And thank you to the TCS crew, Trudy and Aurora, in the booth, and ML headquarters for keeping us moving. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, all the shows are archived. You can follow the InBeth Arquette Show wherever you get your podcasts, Select Editions 2 on the Arts Radio Network and PopNet. All roads lead back to our website, amybetharquette.com. Connect social via social media. You can friend me on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. I am at AB Wright. So our producer, Trudy Hart, is at Radio Trudy. In the meantime, drive safe, play nice, dream big. Come back and see us, won't you? On the Amy Beth Arquette Show, please stay safe. Wear the darn mask. Don't take those chances. Believe with Mary Chapin. Take care. I love y'all.
I took a walk in the rain one day on the wrong side of the tracks. I stood on the rail till I saw that train just to see how my heart would react. Now some people say that you shouldn't tempt fate, and for them I cannot disagree. But I never learned nothing from playing it safe. I think fate should not tempt me. I take the light, but there was brimstone in his throat. He'd show me the way according to him in return for my personal check. I flipped my channel back to CNN and I lit another cigarette. I take my chances. Yes, forgiveness doesn't come with a debt. Take my chances every chance I get. very deep. I've been frozen out and I've been on fire, and the tears are mine.